Chinese investment into the U.S. falls to a seven-year low. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. First, though, Turkey has responded to President Trump's threats to devastate the country economically if it attacks Kurdish forces in Syria after U.S. troops pull out over the next few months. In a tweet, a spokesman for the Turkish president said his country expected America to honor its strategic partnership with Turkey. The BBC's Iram Coker says Ankara has to take U.S. threats seriously.
The United States is one of the largest trade partners of Turkey to begin with, and it is one of the key allies in many other areas, including defense and economy and investment. In August, when the United States imposed sanctions on Turkey, we saw a huge collapse in the value of the Turkish lira, which also had impacts on the real economy. For example, today we had industrial production data from November. It's been declining for three consecutive months, starting with the decline of lira in late August.
So the U.S. does have a lot of impact on Turkey's economy.
Yes, but Turkey is trying to find other trade and investment partners and reduce the use of U.S. dollars in its trades with Iran, China, and Russia. Their share in the Turkish economy is growing gradually. So while Turkey and the United States remain as strategic partners, we see Turkey is also looking for other business partners as well.
Iram, just putting this particular dispute aside, where is the economy at the moment?
The national debt level is increasing. The inflation is high and the growth, it's not really slowing down. So the underlying issue here regarding the Turkish economy is the trust. The market players, they don't know who to trust because the head of the economy management, the treasury and the finance minister is the son-in-law of President Erdogan. So trust issues still remain there, and the government, they haven't really taken any steps to resolve these issues. And also the political issues, especially with relations with the United States, it is still there. So the risks remain high for the Turkish economy.
Iram Coker there. Now, telling figures from China this morning, exports overall in 2018 were higher, but in December they contracted sharply, 5% year on year, the biggest monthly fall in 2 years. Julian Evans-Pritchard is senior China economist at Capital Economics in Singapore.
We're starting to see more of the impact show in the data. It's the biggest drop in a few years. Exports now contracting, but not only exports, also imports contracting. And clearly there's weakness in domestic demand. So it's not just external headwinds. And this doesn't bode very well for the outlook for this year.
Now, Chinese investment in the U.S. is also at a seven-year low. It's down 84% from its peak. What's going on there?
One factor is that the environment for Chinese firms in the U.S., but also in Europe to some degree, has become a lot less hospitable. There's much greater concerns about national security and much greater scrutiny of Chinese investment. But, you know, the other factor has been China's own domestic restrictions on outbound investment that were introduced in 2016 to try and stem capital outflows. They've only been partially relaxed and mostly for projects that are related to the Belt and Road Initiative, so not so much for investment into developed markets. We'll probably never go back to the peak that we saw in 2016, at least not for quite a few years.
Julian Evans-Pritchard. Let's do the numbers. Stocks around the world are mostly lower as investors take stock of the global economy after those latest China trade figures. And the British pound is holding steady as a key Brexit vote looms tomorrow. Look at any major city around the world and they all have one thing in common, a shortage of affordable housing. We've been building pretty much the same way for hundreds of years, but that could be changing as the BBC's Manuela Zaragoza reports from the north of England.
This factory is enormous because it's building houses, but not as we know them. The company building them is a giant financial services firm. I'm being shown round by Rosie Toogood, Chief Executive of Legal & General Modular Homes.
We've invested tens of millions. We're still building houses the way in which the Victorians did. It just feels ripe that we take the lessons learned over the last 100 plus years from modern manufacturing businesses and apply those to traditional construction.
What's being built here are two-storey homes in four separate modules. Each module is kitted out here in the factory.
You know, it'd normally take about 40 weeks to build a traditional home. We'll be able to build these kind of homes in about half the time.
there are reasons why manufacturing houses might make sense to introduce more innovation, for example, in a sector that's been short of it.
Every other industry out there, particularly the manufacturing sectors, have evolved their model, they've innovated, they've applied technology and equipment.
That's Mark Farmer, Chief Executive of Cast Consultancy. He explains that builders, plumbers and electricians are all part of an ageing and shrinking workforce. Young people are shunning these traditional trades.
They don't see construction as an aspirational career, and part of that is linked to the image of the industry. Health and safety risks, quite dirty, and most kids will now be thinking about technology type careers. Skills is the one thing that is going to force the industry to change.
There are other challenges before modular can go mainstream too. The industry will need to have planners on their side, and there are numerous industry standards that must be met. Plus, transporting large numbers of homes may not be straightforward. Although house builders are increasingly incorporating some factory-produced parts, such as roofs, into construction, fully modular homes account for only a tiny proportion of the market, around 1 or 2%. For now, though, the focus will be on whether mass demand for modular housing materialises to ensure that all that investment and innovation pays off. In London, I'm the BBC's Manuela Zaragoza for Marketplace.
Remember, grab our micro-podcast wherever you get yours. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.